no, no, I should say it.
No, she's ready. She's, you know, doing fine. Ready for me, though, just wait for next time.
All right.
Is that Fry Ben Asher, Ancho Ben? Fry Ben, Ben, Ben Asher, Ancho. Shira is the English Nishmas of Fry Ben Asher, Ancho. Just talking about a somewhat of a strange application of Kotzer, and the reason why we're talking about it because it opens up a very, very real shaila for us for Lysa, not so much in terms of Kotzer on Shabbos, but more of a Kotzer on Yom Kippur. So we ran out of time at the end of the shiur last week, so let's just recap for a moment, get back into that case, and then we'll move on with the more related to Kotzer issues back to Shabbos. So Gemara quoted a machlekes at Tanoim about if a person removes honey from a honeycomb, rode chalutash, is that considered to be kotzer in Torah or not? Why in the world would somebody think that's kotzer in Torah? Honey doesn't grow in honeycombs. That's what we say. It's tachana. We say that it's only midiraban. It looks a little bit like kotzer, but it's not kotzer deraisa. And Rabbi Eliezer disagrees. Lots of special pasuk yes, the kosov that's considered to be kotzer on a level of deraisa. So within the view of Rabbi Eliezer, which we happen not to accept, Ramah, within the view of Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos speaks about what would the din be if a person did rode chalos dvash on yontif. The Gemara says he would be chayav malchus. That would be a bona fide issur min haTorah, according to Rabbi Eliezer. And again, the halacha, we don't follow this because we hold that rode chalos dvash would only be a derabon even on Shabbos. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, it would be a derais of kotzer both for Shabbos and for yontif. So the Mishnah are very bothered. How in the world can it be issur min haTorah? The person is doing it with tzorach ochal nefesh. He's trying to eat the honey, so that should be heter gomer. In the Torah, for sure, that should be okay. What's wrong with that? So we mentioned last week, there was some Mishnah who say that kotzer is not subject to the heter gomer. And then Mishnah disagree with that. And then Mishnah say, kotzer technically is subject to the Torah, at least to the heter gomer nefesh. So what's going on? So to answer this question, Tosis creates the following scenario. Tosis says that it must be that the person is planning on eating the honey tomorrow. He's not planning on eating the honey today, and he's doing it so late in the day that even if he didn't want to eat the honey today, he couldn't. So Seth tells us when you do malach on yontif so late in the day that it's impossible to benefit from that malach on that day, so that's considered to be an issur deraisa. That's called shlo l'tzorach hayom. If I cook in the morning, so I'm planning on eating it today. Even if I cook a little bit later in the afternoon, even though I finish lunch, but I could feed the food to somebody else, that's also not an issur deraisa. But if I cook 2 minutes before shkia, I do malach, I do kaitze, I do rodas chosvash, 2 minutes before shkia, that by default will be an absolute issur deraisa. So what does it have to do with us? What do we do? The whole rodas chosvash is the rabbanan, the whole kaitze is the rabbanan. What does this impact on us? What does have an impact on us in the following matter? The Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim and Dachman Vav, that the only justification that we have for making an Erev Tavshilin is the fact that in the Torah there's not really a problem with cooking anyway from Friday, from Yom Kippur to Shabbos. If cooking from Yom Kippur to Shabbos would have been an Issur Deraisa, then that would have been a big joke to take an egg and a challah roll and say hocus pocus and assume the rice would disappear. That's crazy. The only reason why such a kunst works is because min haTorah, it's not a problem altogether. It's only a problem with the Rabbanan. And for the Rabbanans, they created this hekeh, this way of reminding us that generally, we should remember, we shouldn't really be cooking too much on Yom Tov, we shouldn't be cooking for Chol on Yom Tov. So with the Rabbanan, they lifted this Isser by doing the Hekra of Erev Tavshilin. But unless you can solve the problem in HaTorah, then you have a much more serious problem. How do you solve the problem in HaTorah? What matter is there in HaTorah to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos? So we pass in Halacha, the matter is Ha'il, that I'm not really cooking for Shabbos, I'm cooking for today. We're eating today, lunch already, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but guests may come. So I'm allowed to pull up a chulin 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday because somebody may come with a way to milchut, they get hungry at 5 o'clock and I give them some of the chulin. So that would be okay. So the only reason why you're allowed to cook on Yom Kippur Shabbos, even with an after shilin, is because guests may show up, and that's still called the Tzorech Hayom. So comes the Magen Avraham and connected the dots. Magen Avraham and the Simon about after shilin starts to create a whole problem for us. Says the Magen Avraham, if the Gemara Pesachim says that the only matir for cooking from Yom Tov to Shabbos is based on how the guests may come, and Tosa says in the sugya of Rodei Chalos Dvash that if you do malach at the last minute and there's no time for the guests to come, so then that's a problem. So that undermines the entire heter. So the Magen Avraham paskins that if a person puts up a shulin Friday afternoon on Yom Tov, Friday afternoon with a Erev Tavshilin, he did everything right, and he put the shulin up at the last minute, and the shulin is not edible by Shabbos, so says the Magen Avraham, that's an issur deraisa. That's an issur deraisa of cooking on Yom Tov. Issur deraisa cooking by Yom Tov. What's he talking about? I made an Erev Tavshilin on Yom Tov. No, says the Magen Avraham, The only matir ve'erev tashilin is if the possibility of guests exists. If it's too late for the guests to come, the food's not going to be ready by then, so then that would be a real bishul gomer on the level of deraisa. It's quiet and chumrah. So not everybody accepts this mugger of rav. The Shavura quotes some disagreeing. We're pulled in the chadushim, we're not learning to serve ve'erev tashilin right now. But the root of this entire mugger of rav, the source of this whole mugger of rav, has to do with the sugi of kotzer. And it's not the regular kotzer, it's the kotzer in yontif. It's not even the regular kotzer in yontif, it's the rov dechelos dvash, which we don't even paskin like on yontif. So as we see many times in halacha, sometimes you have to learn a whole sugya that's not halacha. Rabbi Eliezer's sheet about rov dechelos dvash in yontif, who would have thought that has to do with today's shiur? So the answer is because of that sheet that Rabbi Eliezer rov dechelos dvash in yontif, that created a whole scenario for us that we cook on yontif. So those of you that are well aware of the fact that this announcement gets made every single yontif. When you have a yontif on a Friday, anytime there's an after shilut, so you always get up and I announce yontif morning. All the women should remember that the food should be put up in enough time that it's edible before yontif starts. This is not the time to put up before Shabbos starts. This is not the time to put up shulchan at 6 o'clock. It's not the time to start cooking at 4:30. Everything has to be done early in the day so that in theory it can be fed to guests. If not, then it's a very, very serious shayla. And again, the source of the shayla has to do with starting out with the sugif kotze. Not sure whether the hot and the cold water mixed together properly over here, or whether by the time the cold gets down, the hot is not doing so. I got to get the perfect mix that it works right here. So, see how this went. Okay. So now we go on to other issues relating to kotzer, but now we're going to leave the realm of kotzer d'oraisa into the realm of kotzer d'rabbanan, into the realm of different gezeiros, different decrees that were made by the chachamim to prevent us from violating kotzer. There are many, many, very, very real halacha l'maisa applications of this idea of kotzer. We spoke a little bit in the last year, 2 weeks ago, we spoke a little bit about peres hanoshim, about finding fruit on the floor, but now we move into some other issues that are very much related to us halacha. So there is a Mishnah at the end of Masechet Beitzah. The Mishnah lists off a whole series of different Yisurim d'Rabbanan. And the Mishnah says the following Yisurim d'Rabbanan apply Bein b'Shabbos, Bein b'Yontif. So one of those Yisurim d'Rabbanan is in Roch v'Nogaviyah Behema. One is not allowed to ride on an animal, neither on Shabbos nor on Yontif. This is not a Nisim d'Raisa, it's only a Nisim d'Rabbanan. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Yevamah that in the days of the Chashmonaim, so there was a lot of rifyon in Hilchos Shabbos. People weren't as careful in Hilchos Shabbos. Part of it came because the Greeks were interfering with the Hilchos Shabbos. So there were a lot of people who weren't as careful in Shabbos as they were supposed to be. The Gemara tells a story that one time there was a person who was caught riding on a horse in the street on Shabbos. So they punished him severely, even though you have to look for you not have skill for that. It's not just a deraisa, but nevertheless, the Beis Din felt that since it was so important to make a stand that Hilchos Shabbos, Afghan time, and people were being mitzvah with Hilchos Shabbos, so they punished the person significantly more than it would have been subject to, because according to the strict halacha, it's really only a violation of the Yom Kippur. But the mice of the din is that Ein Roch V'Nogav V'Heimu B'Shabbos in the Yom Kippur. I once had a strange situation that a couple of summers ago, I was in the middle of the Shabbos afternoon, and I was sitting and learning in Beit Meir, and I just went kolol, and I happened to have been learning the sugya of Ein Roch V'Nogav V'Heimu. And I was sitting and learning, then I went outside the Beis Medrash for a second, and I saw there was a fellow who was walking with a horse. Again, if it would have happened in Burgerfield, it would have been very, very strange. Maybe here, nothing strange. It can't have anything to do with live animals. It's for sure not strange. So I said, wow, the guy's walking around with his horse. Wow, this is the sugya, this is it. I thought, struck it up to coincidence or something. Then a couple of days later, I was learning a sugya about making a bracha on a frosh's tumas and maestras, about if something is only a suffix, if it's devil, if it's divine, whether you make a bracha as a robe, as a suffix. And as I was mamashim, ranking to the mamashim, in the middle of that sugya, somebody from the moshav walks into the Beis Medrash and brings me some fruit. And he says to me, he just plucked it off his tree, and he wanted to be exactly me to recite a bracha on fresh instruments and maestros. This is Vadei Teva. I couldn't believe it. I said, two for two in the same week, I'm learning some sugya. So I immediately start to learn the sugya, binyan Beis HaMikdash. Unfortunately, I was two for three. Okay. So the Mishnah says that Ein Roch V'Nogav V'Heimu B'Shabbos V'Yontif. The question is why not? So the Mishnah never explains why. So why is it prohibited? So the Gemara has a very, very interesting answer. The Gemara says, you know why you're not allowed to ride an animal? Because we're afraid you may come to violate the malach of kotzer. Kotzer, riding animals have to do kotzer. So if a person's riding an animal, and the animal is not behaving so well, so you may be tempted to hit the animal. What are you going to hit the animal with? So you have to pull off a branch or something, hit the animal a little, not to hurt the animal, something like, I don't hit the animal too hard, give a little zest, give a little kick or something. So we're afraid, Shem Yachtoch Zimayra, we're afraid you may come to cut off a branch, and by doing so, that's going to be a Torah violation of Kotzer. So therefore, Chazal wanted to stop the problem, hit the problem in the bud, Ein Rochon Agadi Yevhema, Gizeh Shem Yachtoch Zimayra. So that's what appears in the Gemara, at least in the Talmud Bavli, Imma Sefer Beitza. That is the official reason given for why you're not allowed to be Ruach L'Gavim. So everybody knows you can't run animals and shop. It's like a given. Everyone knows that. But most people don't realize the reason for it. The reason is nothing to do with animals. It has to do with Kreitza, Malach, Gezer, Shemi, Yachta, Zubayra. So the truth is that there may be other reasons in the background also why in Ruach L'Gavim. And the Bavli itself suggests another possible reason. Actually, all the reasons that we're going to talk about now for a moment, even though we're going to get a little bit off kotzer for a little bit, but each reason is important in and of itself. Each reason really impacts Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Yontif in several different ways. So let's try just to limit the subject for a moment. They wrote in the Hema, even though the official reason is kotzer, and that's the reason why we're learning the Sugyot together, because it's related to kotzer. But the Bavli, in the end of Masechas Beitza, suggests maybe there's another reason why you're not supposed to run animals, because maybe it's going to end up to be a violation of Tchumen. We know that the Torah tells us that Yetzer Ishum Koma B'Yom HaShvi, one is not supposed to leave their house area on Shabbos. So there was a big machlokes HaKanoim, what exactly that phrase means. So there was some Tanoim of the opinion that refers to the institution called Tchumen, that a person is not allowed to walk more than 2,000 amos out of his basic surrounding area, whatever that means, surrounding area. We'll see that in a moment. But he's not allowed to travel X amount of amos, 2,000 amos. That was the view of Rabbi Akiva, that Tchumen is a prohibition in HaTorah. How in the world did Rabbi Akiva know the magic number 2,000? So the Gemara derives it from Sukkim, by the Ori Halavim, the other bunch of Maaseh, Madosim Chutz Le'ir, Apayim Amo, whole Chagadja. But the bottom line is that Rabbi Akiva came up with this idea that traveling more than 2,000 amos is a Torah violation of Ayeti Shemkom Yomashvi. And the other Torah disagreed with Rabbi Akiva. The Chacham said, no, it's not true. That, yes, it's true, you're not allowed to travel 2,000 amos. That everyone agrees with. Those are Mishnayos. Everyone accepts as an insur of Tchumen. But the other Chacham is saying it was only instituted in the Rabbanon. And Min HaTorah, you're allowed to travel. And the Rabbanon, you're not allowed to go more than 2,000 amos. So it's a machlekes HaTanoim. So we paskin like the Chacham. We paskin like the majority view that the issur of 2,000 amos is only with the Rabbanon. Does that mean that we paskin that the whole Tchumen is the Rabbanon? There's no such thing as Tchumen Deraisa. That the Pasuk is not even talking about Tchumen. So that's a further machlekes. So there's a Rishalmi that says that even the Chacham who disagreed with Rabbi Akiva, that they held that 2,000 amos is only with the Rabbanon, they also subscribe to Tchumen D'Araisa. It's just that they had a much, much higher number. Their cutoff as to what constitutes a prohibition of going out of the Tchumen HaTorah is Yud Beis Mil, the amount of distance of 12 mil. The mil is about a mile or so to take. The amount of distance a person can walk in about 18 minutes, it took approximately a mile. So if a person walks 12 miles on Shabbos, that would be an issur d'oraisa. If a person just walks within 2,000, a little bit past 2,000 amos, that would only be an issur d'rabbanan. That's the view of Yerushalmi, that's the view of the Rambam. And other Yerushalmi question even that. Other Yerushalmi say, no, the whole thing, lock, stock, and barrel, is all with the Rabbanan. Tchumen doesn't exist in the Torah. Either Pasuk and Chumash. The Pasuk is not talking about going to the Chum, the Pasuk is talking about carrying. Ayetzish Mekoma means don't go out and carry them on, because that's going to be a violation of carrying. That's a deraisa. But to walk out of the Chum, the whole thing is to Rabbanan. So you have three logical possibilities. What I take on Tchumen is, Rabbi Akiva is the biggest machmir. He holds that Tchumen is deraisa, even 2,000 amos. The middle ground is the Rishalmi, that we don't follow Rabbi Akiva, but we do accept Tchumen deraisa, Yud Beis Mil. And there's the most lenient, that even Yud Beis Mil is Rabbanan. The whole Tchum is going to be Rabbanan. How come most of us don't even think about this? Regular Shabbos comes and goes, and most of us never ever think about Tchumen. So the answer is, the Mishnah say in Erevin, that Tchumen only begins when you walk out of the city limits. If a person is within a city, so then they can walk, if it's a very big city, you can walk from one end of the city to the other, that's perfectly okay. Once your city ends, halakhically, whatever that means, halakhically, end of a city, then the 2,000 amos begin to tick off. So for most of us, it's almost never relevant. So a person's it's called Kona Shvisa. Kona Shvisa means that's where you are when Shabbos starts. Let's say it comes Friday afternoon, the sun sets, and I'm sitting in 36 Rector Court. So my Tchumen don't start from 36 Rector Court. My Tchumen starts from the end of the Halachic City. Where is the end of the Halachic City? It doesn't even end at the border of Rycliffe, because Teaneck and Bergenfield merged to become one city, even though municipality-wise they're two different cities, zip code-wise they're different cities, snow removal are different cities, but But in terms of halakha, it's the same city, because there's a continuation of houses. So since you go from one house to the next, you go from, who was at the end of the Rabbi Neuberger. So Rabbi lives across the street from Rabbi Neuberger, so their house, and then Rabbi Neuberger's house is the next house, which is right, it's the same city. How far does the city go? It keeps on going. It goes very, 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 very far. It may even go into Englewood, may go into Fort Lee, maybe. To the top of the bridge, maybe, depends on yes. So it goes very, very far. It goes far in all directions because it's continuous houses. So that's why for most of us, we don't even think of Tchumen because we're always within how far we walk. The guy wants to walk from here to Holy Name Hospital. It's still in the Tchum. It's a 3-mile walk. It doesn't matter. That's still considered to be within the Tchum because he hasn't left the city limits yet. If a person is out in the country somewhere, out in the boonies somewhere, or many out in some Moshav in Eretz Yisrael, middle of nowhere, and now you want to start walking, taking a mile walk on Shabbos, then you can have a problem. Then you can have a very, very real problem with Tchumen. So you have to be careful about that. But in pretty much a normal, civilized society today, where we are, so then most of the time Tchumen is not an issue. But there is, in theory, there's an issue of Tchumen. So comes the Gemara in Beitz and says, maybe that's the reason why you shouldn't be riding animals. Because riding animals is going to enhance the amount of distance that you're going to travel. If a guy walks himself, he gets tired for 10 minutes, so he's not going to walk that far. But if a guy gets on an animal, so he's going to be riding for who knows how long, so there's a very, very good chance that he's going to end up violating Tchumen. So maybe Chazal nipped the problem in the bud, and they said a gezeira to Tchumen, don't ride on an animal, leave it around the corner, gezeira, you may have to take a long hike, you may end up violating Tchumen. So the Gemara says that gezeira only makes sense if Tchumen would be a deraisa. If Tchumen would only be an issa derabanan, that's a very, very shaky gezeira. If you make an issa derabanan, don't ride an animal gezeira, you may come to do an issa derabanan, that's not a little bit what we call it, ain gozu gezeira gezeira. We tend not to make issur derabanan to protect other issur derabanan. The Gemara says it's unlikely that there's a real issa deraisa here anyway, and therefore, that's probably not the reason why ain rochel gabi behema. So again, the Bavli suggested it as a possibility, and the Bavli potentially rejected it. And if you really believe that Tchumen is on a Dirabonan, then it's very unlikely that's the reason why you can't run animals. So we're stuck with the other reason. We're stuck with the reason of Ein Rofa Ragabi Behema because of Kotzer, because of Shem Yechtov Zimara. Just parenthetically, the fact that the Bavli was willing to entertain the possibility of not riding on animals because of Tchumen, even on Yontif, because the Mishnah is talking about Beim Shabbos and Yontif, that's a whole other discussion in the Poskim about Tchumen on Yontif. Tchumen does exist in Yontif, but may not be derais on Yontif. That's really a whole other world of discussion. So that reason of Tchumen is very, very shaky, because it's probably not derais on, and it's Yontif, and a lot of other problems. So we're probably left with the conclusion of the Bavli that the official reason why we don't run animals on Shabbos and Yontif is a Gezeira Mishum Kaitzer. But there is a third possible reason that appears in the Rishali, that may also be relevant for us. The Rishali throws out another reason why you're not allowed to ride on animals in Shabbos and Yontif. Rishali says maybe it's a violation of Shvisas Behema. It's a possible you're not allowed to have your animals working for you on Shabbos. So if I'm riding an animal on Shabbos, my animal is working for me. What malach is my animal doing? It's carrying. It's violating the malach of Hotsah. Most of us don't think about animals doing work. Most of us don't have animals. But if a person owns it, say a person owns a dog, so they have to be careful that their dog doesn't do malacha on Shabbos. What malacha is the dog doing? The dog's not plowing a field. What malacha can the dog be doing? So the Mishnayos and the Shabbos describe animals carrying on Shabbos as being a problem. If you live in an Erev, so that's okay. I'm allowed to carry. My animal's allowed to carry. But if I go out of my Erev, let's say I don't have an Erev. So a person lives in a place with no Erev and he wants to take his dog outside on Shabbos, so you have to be very careful what the dog is carrying or not carrying. So there are klal, there are mishnayos, there are sugyas, the whole parak called the mevehema, that anything that the dog is wearing as like a garment, so the same way I'm allowed to wear a shirt, I'm allowed to wear a jacket, wear shoes on Shabbos, that's not called carrying. Those items are bottled to my body, so a whole series of parallel halachas applies for animals as well. So things that the animal needs, things that are serving the tzorach, the guf of the hema, those are considered to be bottled to the animal. But sometimes the animal has things on that are not necessarily part of the guf of the hema, so those would be problematic. So one would have to be very, very careful. If you have a dog and you live when there's no Erev, and your dog's going out for a walk, so then you have to be careful that anything that it's wearing, if it's wearing anything, has to meet the criteria. Then you have to learn Prakma Behema. You have to learn 10 Blatmas of Shabbos to figure out what's considered to be appropriate wardrobe for the animal that is considered to be bottled to the animal. So there is an Isser for an animal to carry on Shabbos that would be a potential Isser Diraisa. So the Rishami says that that's the reason why you can't ride on an animal on Shabbos, because the animal is carrying, and that's called carrying. That would be a problem in the Torah. So that's a big, big problem. Why that should be so? So the Beis Yosef already raises a question on this Rishamani. How could it be that you're not allowed to ride an animal because the animal is carrying? The thing is that Chai Nosias Atzma. The Gemara says the end, later on in Masechta Shabbos, that if I carry a human being, I carry somebody who's alive, who's able to move themselves, so Min HaTorah, that's not called carrying. Maybe the Rabban, that's called carrying, but Min HaTorah, that's not called carrying. Therefore, if I pick up, let's say I pick up a 5-year-old kid and I carry him in the street on Shabbos, that would not be a Nisa Deraisa. I didn't say it's mutter, it's the loss of the Rabbanon, but it wouldn't be a Nisa Deraisa. If I carry a baby who can't walk on their own, according to most opinions, that would be a Nisa Deraisa. Once the child's able to walk, that's called Chaylos Azazel, so in a Torah that would be okay. Just parenthetically, people don't realize this. A lot of people think that as long as it's a child, as long as it's a person, you're allowed to carry people on Shabbos. It's Chalal not true. In a Torah, you're allowed to carry a person on Shabbos, but in the Rabbanon, you're not allowed to carry the person, even if they are nurses at Smo. The reason why most people are not, it's not on the radar screen, because we all live in communities, most of us live in communities with Erevin, so we don't even think about these kinds of Shilas. Every once in a while, when the Erev falls down, so people call me with the most elementary Shilas that every kid knew 50 years ago. Somebody called me once about a few years ago when the Erev fell down. They wanted to know, can they wear their baby on Shabbos? Whatever it's called. You want to walk around? I said, no, you can't wear your baby. That's not a shirt. It's not a baby. It's not keeping you warm. The baby is a baby. And you're carrying a baby. If the baby can walk themselves, that would be an issue. If the baby can't walk themselves, it would be a much more serious problem.
If the kid could walk themselves and then they refuse to,
so that's a big problem. Notice, that's a big, big problem. So you shouldn't take them out for such a walk. If you know your kid's going to be
on
that
trip, you need to get stuck. 10 times.
So that's a whole other story. So now this is a common child. The person lives in a place in the area. They took their kid for a lunch somewhere. Then the kid sits down and parks himself in the middle of the street and refuses to move. So it's also to carry the child. The question is, now what do you do with that? So now you have a situation, potentially, with Cholosh and Besokani, a little kid who can leave him in the street. You can sit with him the whole shop is stopping traffic. So now maybe Cholosh kind of. So then, the best thing to do is to try to find a goy. If you have a goy who's available to pick them up, that would be one option. If that's not an option, so then you would have to maybe you have to shnaim asui, you have to have two people carrying the baby together. You have to go through all the different gradations of what options are available. So a chokha man of a rosh, you shouldn't end up like that. The reason why I'm telling this story with such confidence is because it happened to us. Remember years ago in LA, the part of LA, the years now that part has an Erev also, but years ago there was a certain part of LA that didn't have an Erev. And we were there for Shabbos. And Meriak was our youngest. So he was about 2 or 3 years old, give or take. And we were going, I think, maybe around the corner for Shabbos, for a meal, whatever it was. And he walked like a big, big boy. And then the way home, he threw a fit. He didn't want to walk anymore. And he parked himself in the middle of Brea Boulevard, whatever. He parked himself, he didn't want to budge anymore. So we had to go to someone on the block who had a non-Jewish babysitter, and she came and she carried him. He was not a happy camper. It was his choice. Either don't throw a fit or get carried by a stranger. We stayed with him. It wasn't security, kids, abandoned him in the shop, and we walked along with him, but it was not a pretty scene. Anyway, so. But a chopar, at least a love of their eyes, if the person didn't pull themselves, you're allowed to carry them in the Torah. That's what the Beis Yosef raises the question. He says, how can there be an Isser of Shisus Kehema if the mice is not called the Malacha? But what you're doing, the animal is not really doing anything wrong. If the animal would, yes, Moshe Rabbeinu, am I allowed to carry this person? So Moshe Rabbeinu would say, yes, you're allowed to, because in the Torah, it's called Chaynos, it's Atzma. So how can the Mishnah say you can't run an animal because of a problem of Shisus Kehema? So the Beis Yosef has a startling answer. The Beis Yosef says that the definition of malacha for animals is not the same definition as malacha for people. He said, when you're asking a shayla about a person, so a person, we follow the rules of Mishkan and the special klolim, so there are lamitas malachas, and you gotta know, is it their eyes, is their butt, etc. When an animal comes to ask a shayla, the only thing that matters is this a pen and a chana? Is this a tirchana? If the animal's kvetch about what it's doing, thus it's called a malacha. We usually make fun of people. People say, oh, come on, how come you're not allowed to strike a match on Shabbos? That's not really work. You're not sweating. It's not hard work. So the answer to that is silly cash, because the definition of malacha doesn't depend on exertion, sweating, and work. It depends on malachas ha-mishkan. So if it's a constructive activity, if you strike a match, that's a nisid deraisa. If you schlep a couch from one end of the room to another, that's only nisid derabanan. Because hilchos Shabbos is not a function of sweating and exertion. But for animals, there may be something. So the person who has the shayla, he's holding the animal's definition of Shabbos. So the Reish Lakish writes that when Adam wants to know, is this also a mutter? So we don't ask, well, does it meet Rabbi Ribiat's list of 39 malachas and Rabbi Rochek's picture book of the Shah? That doesn't matter. It's just, you just have to look at the animal and see if the animal shits in a way. Is it kvetchy? Is it cranky what it's doing? That's called working on Shabbos. Think you work on Saturday. But if the animal is perfectly okay, it's happy and it's smiling, so then that's okay. The Reish Lakish is a raya. The Mechil, the Rashi quotes from Chulin Chumash, the Mechil says that if an animal is sitting and walking around my backyard and munching on the grass on Shabbos, I don't have to stop and scream, Kaitzer, Chul Shabbos, he's allowed to eat the grass. Why? Because the Mechilta says, Man Yanuach, the animal's enjoying himself, leave him alone. Man Yanuach, he's enjoying it. I'm doing Kaitzer, it doesn't matter. So the Vesayasa says, you see, from that Mechilta, the definition of Malach on Shabbos for animals is not the same as for people. That people are based on Malach, is it Mishkan, animals are depends on, is it Noach, is it Menucha, is it not Menucha?
So,
huh? No,
like meaty,
gummy
concept.
Yeah, that's like for going, not animals.
But if the animal's eating your grass, then you're benefiting
from
cutting your grass.
No, I'm not doing it. That's not my mom, that's not my mice, that's okay. If Min HaShemayim, someone comes, you know, somebody comes and cuts up my grass.
It's not like drinking on your grass and you're walking your grass.
No, because I'm doing it, I'm doing the mice, that's the problem. If something the luck is happening, Min HaShemayim, that's not my problem.
But
it rains, so my grass is growing. Enough to stop the rain.
And you're letting them out.
Okay, that's what
Michilta
says.
Man,
you know, that's okay.
So all the carrying cases that we just mentioned.
Because those are things that are the animal really wouldn't want to have, right?
Bothering
him. Stomach, yeah. It's a big chiddush. A lot of posting don't accept this basis. So those who have dog shadows should try to discuss the details of the dog shadows. So, but anyway, getting back to that story. So there are three possible reasons why Ein Rochel Gabei Yamin. Everyone agrees it's also. No one says you're allowed to ride animals in Shabbos and Yantar, but we're not 100% sure what the reason is. Is the reason the way it appears in the Maskanas of Havli that it's going to cut soon? That's absolutely good. Is it because the possible Havamin of the Baal may be because of Chumet, which is probably rejected, or is it based on the Mishamri's reason that it's based on Shvisas Bema, which again, which is a whole complicated, a lot to do it. But the bottom line is, it is an Isra of Endrach and Gabi Behemoth. Not only is one not allowed to ride a Behemoth on Shabbos and Yontif, one is not even allowed to be Mishtamish, the Baal Chaim on Shabbos and Yontif, one's not allowed to lean on a Behemoth either, one's not allowed to support themselves on a Behemoth as well. For the most part, we assume that not only are you not allowed to ride animals and you're not allowed to lean on animals, but animals basically are mukta on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The only animals that are in Yom Tov are not mukta. If you were planning on shechting it, Beitza is the Yom Tov. If you have a chicken that you were planning on shechting on Yom Tov, then it's not mukta. But Shabbos, where you can shecht, so then all animals are off limits. So we assume that all animals are considered to be mukta on Shabbos.
Is there a mukta problem of rubbing your hand across the fur of the animal?
Anytime, if it's moving part of the animal, maybe that would be a problem. I don't know. Maybe that's considered to be a problem. So there is a question about how this plays out, this man is there. So the Gemara is very clear. Mishnayos, Gemara is in 100 places in Shabbos and Beitza. That all Balei Chaim are considered to be Mukta Mamash, maybe Shabbos, maybe Yom Tov. The one exception of something that's only the Shechita, and again, only on Yom Tov. So there is a question, what if you have a situation where I have an animal for a very, very specific purpose? In the days of Chazal, people didn't have animals as pets. People had animals for purposes. People generally didn't have time to play with things. In the days of Chazal, life was very limited, and you had to make a parnasa, you had to work, and you had to. The idea of having 16 hours a day for entertainment was not on the radar screen. Forget about the days of Chazal until 40 years ago. This concept didn't exist. So people didn't have pet animals. They had animals that were for purposes. So the animals are for, if it's a work animal, I can't, it's mukta on Shabbos and Yom Tov. If it's for the purpose of shechita, but I can't shecht on Shabbos and Yom Tov, so it's off limits on Shabbos and Yom Tov. What if I buy an animal, and the whole goal of the animal, I'm not going to work the animal, the goal of the animal is to be my pet, it's my toy, so I'm playing with it. So maybe one can argue, it's like a toy, it's like any other toy. If the kid has a toy, so you're allowed to play with the toy on Shabbos, as long as they're not malach involved. So maybe an animal, this manazak, can almost be viewed as a toy, and maybe it loses its status of mukta. That was a big question in the poskim. So there was such an idea, there were some poskim who had this idea that maybe pets this man is not considered to be mukta for that reason. And many, many poskim disagree with that. I think probably the majority of the poskim did not accept that svara. That's the way it is, that animals are considered to be mukta no matter what, even this man is there. So you know, one can still take care of the animal, one can feed one's animal on Shabbos, one can even take an animal for a walk, putting aside the issues of carrying, there's an Arab, etc. Because I'm not mamish moving the animal, but if I'm literally tossing the animal around, jumping on the animal, you know, holding onto the animal, passing it around, things like that. So that would be a problem according to most poskim of mukta. Again, there are some who are makil. Years ago already, in the summers when we were in Marav Shah, there was one family on the main campus who had a dog, and my kids just like to play with the dogs. So I used to tell them before Shabbos that we would sometimes walk Shabbos morning over to the main campus. So I would say to them, you know, try not to. I practice. We don't play with animals on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So my kids were old enough to understand what I said, but not old enough to understand you don't tell the whole world about that. So I informed the people who own the dog that my father said that you're not allowed to play with the dog in Shabbos. So that went over real well. So it was damage control. One of those who know the inner workings of Moshe, the relationship between the kol and the camp, is always, you know, an interesting one. So that really, really led to a tremendous amount of harmony between the two. Anyway, Moshe, all's well in Israel. Okay, I don't think the dog's around anymore, but all's well in Israel. So this issur of riding animals and by extension leading on animals. So the Gemara has almost a parallel gezerah, which is very relevant, probably even more relevant for us, and that's the gezerah mit rabbanan in Olam the Mechubar, that one is not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos and Yom Tov for the exact same reason, that we're afraid. The same way if you get on the animal, the next thing you know is you're going to rip off a branch. So this is even more direct. If you get up on a tree, the next thing you know is you're going to pull off an apple, you're going to pull off a branch, you're going to pull off some fruit or something. So that's a real problem. So that's a mission that says, in Olam the Mechubar, you're not allowed to climb on trees on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Not only are you not allowed to climb on trees, you're not allowed to lean on trees either. This is a common problem. I see this much all the time. People should be aware of it. They should really teach their kids about this. I see this all the time. People play outside. They lean against the tree. They put things on the tree. They climb on the tree. They climb on the tree. Little kids. Any and every type of connection with any trees on Shabbos is an outright prohibition of Ein Olam Mechubar Shabbos Yom Tov. So this is a real problem. I remember one summer in Etz HaKolos, we were davening in Tzfat, Kabbal Shabbos, and we were davening outside, like on the fields, overlooking the mountains, and there were a lot of trees around. So all the, some of the kids, you know, leaning against the trees, they're putting the shidurim on the trees. So I told one of the rabbis, I said, when mamish were here to say Kabbal Shabbos with their Riyak Kodesh, this is the blade. If you have to go all the way to Tzfat, to travel 6,000 miles to violate the sisser, I said, Ein Olam Mechubar, Ein Mishtam Shem Mechubar, it's outright Chol Shabbos. So I said, we gotta tell the guys this. So anyway, so it was a strange situation, but that's the din. There's the favor, you're not allowed to do any of these kinds of things. So one should be more careful about this with one's own children. Again, I see this violated right and left within the Dalet Amos of our community. So one should be a little bit more careful about this. So hopefully, with Shem, next week we'll talk a little bit more about. Actually, not next week. Next week I'm going to be in Israel next Sunday, so let's Shem in 2 weeks. So we'll try to pick up just the final touches of this in terms of Ein Olam Mechubar, some of the parameters of the sister how it plays out for us, and then I move on and ready for the next one.